You fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb. You fought all the way, Johnny Reb.
Bring it on. If you're tired of being spoon-fed politically correct cowbum every time you turn the radio on, join Colt Reynolds for The Shooting Bench for the most politically incorrect firearms information program on talk radio.
I heard your teeth chatter from the cold outside. Saw the bullets soaking up the wounds in your side. I saw the young boys as they began to fall. You had tears in your eyes, cause you couldn't help it all. But you fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb. You fought all the way, Johnny Reb.
The Shooting Bench, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 to midnight Eastern, on the Survival Circle.
Thought he'd call a great victory ball, but he asked the band to play the song Dixie. For you, Johnny Reb, and all that you believe, cause you fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb.
She's back! Miss Amy is back with an all-new Living Way Out Here on the Survival Circle Network. Join Amy for an uplifting hour of fun on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Survival Circle. Alright, gather around, drag up the stool. It's time for Liberty Lounge. 2 full hours of classic country music with a splash of news thrown in for good measure. Let's take a break from the current trials and tribulations and try to start our weekend out on a lighter note. Liberty Lounge starts right now.
Well, now, since it's Friday, and just to show my appreciation, we'll knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?
Do that again.
You are so stupid.
That's right.
They're all gonna laugh at you.
That's right.
There is nothing wrong with your radio.
That's right.
This is crazy. What's going on here?
I don't know. My gloves.
I've got $100 smoking in my billfold.
Quack, quack.
I know I ought to save it, but it's burning. Right through my pocket and into my skin. Come Monday morning, I'll be broke again. It's finally Friday, I'm free again. I got my motor running for a wild weekend. It's finally Friday, I'm out of control. Forget the working blues and it's a good time to roll.
All we want to do is pop you off.
A little sugar baby down the road. She's sitting on.
That's right.
I'll be back.
Oh, that's wonderful.
You're naked, is that okay?
Uh-huh.
Stop that. You go blind.
It's wet, but it stretches.
Yeah.
toads. I poof the Citipelli.
Okay, another great welcome on Friday night. I love that welcome y'all give me on Fridays. It's the 18th of October, and we're about to start Liberty Lounge up here. Tonight's going to be a little bit different than what we normally do. I've done this one other time, and it was like, 2 years ago or a little over 2 years ago. And tonight's going to all be, and don't run off when I tell you this, because you're going to like it. It's a lot of fun. This is all country type parodies and comedy stuff, and some of them are just hilarious, but we always try to do something that's fun, and I think this is going to be fun. So, and I want you to join me on Monday, the 21st, yeah, on the 21st of October. We have some very important stuff involving guns and legislation and stuff like that. So, be sure and join me. Amy will be on, before me at her regular time. And, I'd like to get started on it tonight, but I know we'll miss, some of our regular crowd. So I'm going to save it for Monday. So with all that being said, I know you didn't come here on Friday to listen to me talk. We're going to dive right into it here, and I hope you enjoy what we've got for you. And I'll be back a little later. Stand by.
Fowler's the name. Stu Fowler. I'm a rooster. Fighting's my racket. Cockfighting. I come all the way from Texas across the burning sand to wet my feathers in the Rio Grande. I've hobbled for miles through Mexico. I've come to kill a big rooster called Rojo. Doing it all for chicken feed. For a country red, Rojo's wild. His fame has spread for many a mile. The hens all cackle when Rojo's around, but Stu Fowler's here to put Big Red down. I'll give them chickens something to cackle about. It's mid-afternoon as I stand in the street of the Spanish town called Los Leghorns Retreat. At the end of the row, a cantina stands. It ain't nothing but a chicken coop. It's plainly the haunt of an outlaw band. The sign on the front reads La Grande Nesto. And it's there I know I'll find my foe, the fabled Rojo. I can hear foul language coming out of that honky-tonk. I strut down the street, the cock of the walk. I crow for Big Red to come out and talk. Through the swinging doors of the Grand Ernesto, his head erect and his tail feathers low, steps Rojo. I can tell he's a really bad egg. His spurs are long and his eyes are green. an uglier cock I've never seen. He learned to be tough while he's in the pen, but I know his weakness, hens and gin. Then out of that honky-tonk and up to Rojo's side steps the prettiest little dance hall tackler in the West. Roosty Nuster, the southern fried feather duster. Gosh, she's pretty. I'd like to run my hands through that bed comb of hers. Rojo comes at me in a long, lanky run. Some people gather round to watch the fun. Bird to bird and beak to beak, I face Rojo and my heart gets weak. I crow and strut and I jump about, and then I take off in a run, cause I done chickened out.
There was a fella named Willard McBain, and he only had just one thought on his brain. Every evening about midnight he'd slip off alone and call the same lady on a pay telephone.
It's me again, Margaret.
I am Francis J.C.
You don't know me, Margaret, but I know you. Well, this upset the lady, gave her the blues. So she called the police, said, what shall I do? Well, the chief of detectives came around to her home, dropped upon them on her upstairs phone.
It's me again, Margaret. Hello, is this Margaret? I know it's you, Margaret. Are you naked?
Well, he called up Ma Bell, traced him on down to a funky old phone booth on the outskirts of town. It was there that the vice squad with the field glasses read lips of that amorous man as he said,
it's me again, Margaret. Hello. It's just Margaret. I know it's you, Margaret. Wanna hear me bark like Ren Tin Tin?
Well, they cuffed him and dragged him to the station downtown, and they allowed him one phone call before the jailer came round. He wet his chapped lips, cleared his young throat, and then he dialed the telephone softly. He spoke.
Me again, Margaret.
They got me, Margaret.
You ain't gonna miss me, Margaret. I know that. But I'll miss you.
And when I get out, Margaret, I'm gonna come over there with a weed eater and a live chicken. And some cool whip. We'll have a big old dive, Barbie.
Why, yes, ma'am. You can post bond right over here.
Mr. McBain, please.
That'll be $350.
And, how much? much for those handcuffs.
Well, in 1980,
1959, we took a little hike with our scout master down to Lake Anika night. We took a little pizza and we took some sauerkrauts. We marched along together till we seen the Girl Scouts.
We're the boys from Camp Cucamonga. Our mother sent us here for to study nature's ways. We learned to make sparks by rubbing sticks together. And if we catch some girls, then we'll set the woods ablaze.
Well, we crept up to the water and we seen the girls a-swimming. They must have been 100 of them, pretty young women. They looked so fine, even birds forgot to sing. We laid down in the poison oak and didn't say a thing.
We're the boys from Camp Cucamonga. Our mother sent us here for to study nature's ways. We learned to make sparks by rubbing sticks together. And if we catch some girls, then we'll set the woods ablaze.
You want to pick a little? You'll never get rich. Tell that drummer to hold it down. He's drowning me out up here.
I think he's trying to start his own show. Buddy.
Hold it down.
Hold
there,
it
buddy.
Down just a little, buddy. Would you?
You can be replaced, you know.
Just hold it down just a little more. I can still hear you.
Well, the counselor said we could take them by surprise if we didn't say a word till we looked them in the eyes. We kept real still and we had our eyes glued. We seen how they were dressed. They were swimming in the well. They
ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast even we couldn't catch them from Lake Anika Nike all the way to Buffalo.
Well, we marched around till everyone was spooked. We rested for a minute and our forces we regrouped. Then we seen the girls behind some evergreens, captured by a company of United States Marines.
We're the boys from Camp Cucamonga. Our mother sent us here for to study nature's ways. We learned to make sparks by rubbing girls
sticks.
Oh. Rubbing sticks together.
And if we catch some girls, then we'll set the woods ablaze.
This song is the Wildwood Flower. Now, the Wildwood Flower is an old country classic. It's gained a whole new popularity. The song isn't any more popular, but the flower is doing real good. Wildwood Flower grew wild on the farm, and we never knowed what it was called. Some said it's a flower, and some said it's a weed. I didn't give it much thought. One day I was out there talking to my brother, and I reached down for a weed to chew on. Things got fuzzy and things got blurry, and then everything was gone. Didn't know what happened, but I knew it beat the hell out of sniffing burlap. I come to, my brother was there, and he said, "What's wrong with your eyes?" I said, "I don't know. I was chewing on a weed." He said, "Well, let me give it a try." Spent the rest of that day and most of that night trying to find my brother Bill. Caught up with him about 6 o'clock the next morning, naked, singing on the windmill. He said he flew up there. I had to fly up and get him down. He's about half crazy. The very next day, we picked a bunch of them weeds and we put them in the sun to dry. Then we mashed them up and cleaned them off. Put them in the corn cob pipe. Smoking them wildwood flowers got to be a habit. We never seen no harm. Oh, we thought it was kind of handy. Take a trip and never leave the farm. They go puff that wildwood weed. Next thing you know, you're just wandering around behind the little animals. All good things got to come to an end. It's the same with the wildwood weeds. One day this fella from Washington come by and spied one and turned white as a sheet. And he dug and he burned and he burned and he dug and he killed all our cute little weeds. And then he drove away. We just smiled and waved, sitting there on that sack of seeds. Y'all come back now, you hear?
The old hometown looks the same as they kick me off the train. It is the same. I just left yesterday. And here to meet me is, hey, where's everybody at? They're supposed to be here. Down the road I look, and there runs Mary. No wonder she's in such a hurry. I always chase her through the green, green grass of home. But it's nice to touch the green, green grass of home. I tried to smoke some of that stuff once. The old outhouse is still standing. What'd you expect it to do, walk? It could. And there's the old oak tree that I once fell out of and broke my jug. Down the lane I stumble, I ain't in no hurry, 'cause I'm gonna cut across on Mary. I'll catch her in the green, green grass of home. Oh, how we sit here in this green grass that was halfway up to your knees. I used to reach over and I'd pull on your pig's tail. What'd you ever do with that little old fat pig anyway? And I remember what you showed me one time, where your daddy hid his moonshine here beneath the green, green grass of home. Yes, they all came to see me. I couldn't see them, but they sure saw me. I was crawling through the green, green grass of home.
Where I was born is on a little old hillside farm. My pa raised six kids, and one of them was me. In the fall of the year, when the fields got white, we'd start picking cotton about daylight. On Saturday, pa would take it all to town. In along about dark, when everything was still, we could tell it was pa coming down the hill, 'cause he'd rear back and he'd sound off something like this. With a lantern light, 'cause the roads got crooked on Saturday night, and he'd come on down the hill and he'd stop in the yard. He'd sit up there on that wagon seat and he'd say, boys, I'm hard to beat, 200 pounds of steel and twice as hard. Cause I'm wild and woolly and full of fleas, and I've never been curved below the knees, and he'd rear back and bellow out a chorus or two. That's my ball. Set him rough and ready and about half wild. I can whip anybody in a half a mile. Of course, there wasn't anybody else there except me and little Skeet. Did him just as tough as a hickory fryer, and I can dive deeper and come up drier. And he did it, too, right off that wagon seat. So he it shook him up when he hit the ground. Pa got up and looked around, and then ran back and let us have it again.
Papa, do what about you, Papa?
No, I have a cat. No, I don't sing. I said I could. I didn't say I was going to. No, but I really could. I remember all of these pretty much by heart. I sat here and lip sync to every one of them. And, I can, and I don't know why. I don't know why our household, I guess just because everybody in our family, both sides, you know, it's so much different back then. It seems like no matter what we were doing, it was always, however serious it was, there was still wisecracks and everybody being a smart aleck, and we just always had fun. And we always, you know, my dad, my uncles, my granddad always sang this kind of stuff. And I had the Homer and Jethro stuff. I've still got albums by Homer and Jethro, and that was something that I remember from my grandma and granddad's house. Now, nowadays, you let your kids sit and watch these stupid damn shows and play games on the phone and on the computer and all this stuff. I sat there and played with little trucks and guns and whatnot and listened to these songs over and over and over. And over, and I remember all of them really well. So that's the difference in how we were raised, you know, I think back then. But, anyway, this stuff tickles me. I like all of it.
In the swamp, they hunted alligator for living. They just knock them in the head with a stomp. The Louisiana law gonna get you, Amos. It ain't legal hunting alligator down in the swamp, boy. Now everybody blames his old man for making him mean as a snake. When Amos Moses was a boy, his daddy would use him for alligator bait. Tie a rope around his waist and throw him in the swamp.
$600 down here now, $10 now, $25 now, $35 now, $50 now, $60 will give me $60 now, $75, $75 another $85 on the buy there. There was a boy in Arkansas who wouldn't listen to his ma when she told him he should go to school. He'd sneak away in the afternoon, take a little walk, then pretty soon you'd find him at the local auction barn. He'd stand and listen carefully, then pretty
be an auctioneer. $25 bid and I'll $30, $30, will you give me 30, make it 30 bid, I'm on my $30, will you give me 30, ooh, bid a $30 bid. $30 bid and I'll $35, will you give me 35, I'll make it 35, I'll bid a 35, ooh, what a bid at a $35 bid. As time went on, he did his best and all could see, he didn't just practice calling bids both night and day. His pap would find him behind the barn just working up an awful storm as he tried to imitate the auctioneer. But his pap said, son, we just can't stand to have a mediocre man selling things at auction using our good name. I'll send you off to auction school, then you'll be nobody's fool. You can take your place among the best. $35 bid, another $40, $40, will they give me 40, make it 40, bid, I'm all a $40, don't we live 40, who would bid a $40 bid? $40 bid, and now 45, will they give me 45, I'll make it a 45, a bid a 45, who would have bid it at a $45 bid? So from that boy who went to school, there grew a man who played it cool. He came back home a full-fledged auctioneer. Then the people came from miles around just to hear him make that rhythmic sound that filled their hearts with such a happy cheer. His fame spread out from shore to shore. He had all he could do and more. Had to buy a plane to get around. Now he's a top in all the land, and it's all to give that man a hand. He's the best of all the auctioneers. $45 bid, another bid, dollar 50, will they give me 50, make it 50, bid it all, $50, will they give me 50, hooray, bid a $50 bid. $50 bid, and now 55, will they give me 55, make it a 55, bid a 55, sold that hog for a $50 bill. Hey, well, all right, sir, open the gate and let them out and walk them, boys. Here we come, a lot number 29 in, what are they going to give for them? I'm a 25, I'll get 35, another 50, make it 50, bid it all, 59, 60, will they give me 69, 75, and 85, and 95, 100, 125, and 50, 75, and 2, and 3, and 4, and 5, and 6, and 7, and 8,
taking a trip out to L.A., tooling along in my Chevrolet, toking on the number and digging on the radio. Just as I crossed the Mississippi line, I heard that highway start to whine, and I knew that left rear tire was about to go. Well, the spare was flat, and I got up tight, cause there wasn't a filling station in sight, so I just limped on down the shoulder on the rim. I went as far as I could and would've stopped the car. It was right in front of this little bar, kind of a redneck-looking joint called the Dewdrop Inn. Well, I stuffed my hair up under my hat and told the bartender that I had a flat. Would he be kind enough to give me change for a one? Well, there was one thing I was sure proud to see. There wasn't a soul in the place except for him and me, and he just looked disgusted and pointed toward the telephone. Station down the road a ways, and he said he wasn't very busy today, and he could have somebody there in just about 10 minutes or so. He said, now you just stay right where you're at, and I didn't bother to tell the darn fool, but I sure as hell didn't have any place else to go. I just ordered up a beer and sat down at the bar when some guy walked in and said, who owns this car with the peace sign? He looked at me and I damn near died, and I decided that I'd just wait outside, so I laid a dollar on the bar and headed for the door. Just when I thought I'd get out of there with my skin, these five big dudes come strolling in with this one old drunk chick and some fellow with green teeth. And I was almost at the door when the biggest one said, you tip your hat to this lady, son, and when I did, all that hair fell out from underneath. Now the last thing I wanted was to get in a fight in Jackson, Mississippi on a Saturday night, especially when there was three of them and only one of me. But they all started laughing and I felt kind of sick, and I knew I'd better think of something pretty quick, so I just reached out and kicked the old green teeth right in the knee. Now he let out a yell that'd curl your hair, but before he could move I grabbed me a chair and said, watch him folks, cause he's a thoroughly dangerous man. Well, you may not know it,
This man's a spy. He's an undercover agent for the FBI, and he's been sent down here to infiltrate the Ku Klux Klan. He was still bent over, holding on to his knee, but everybody else was looking and listening to me, and I laid it on thicker and heavier as I went. I said, would you believe this man has gone as far as tearing Wallace stickers off the bumpers of cars, and he voted for George McGovern for president. Well, he's a friend of them long-haired hippie-type pink old fags. I bet you he's even got a commie flag tacked up on the wall inside of his garage. He's a snake in the grass, I tell you guys. He may look dumb, but that's just a disguise. He's a mastermind in the ways of espionage. They all started looking real suspicious at him, and he jumped up and said, now just wait a minute, Jim, you know he's lying. I've been living here all of my life. I'm a faithful follower of Brother John Birch, and I belong to the Antioch Baptist Church, and I ain't even got a garage. You can call home and ask my wife. Then he started saying something about the way I was dressed, but I didn't wait around to hear the rest. I was too busy moving and hoping I didn't run out of luck. When I hit the ground, I was making tracks, and they were just taking my car down off the jack. So I threw the man a 20 and jumped in and fired that mother up. Mario Andretti would have sure been proud of the way I was moving when I passed that crowd coming out the door and heading toward me in a trot. And I guess I should have gone ahead and run, but somehow I just couldn't resist the fun of chasing them all just once around the parking lot. Well, they're headed for their car, but I hit the gas and spun around and headed them off in the pass. I was slinging gravel and putting a ton of dust in the air. I had them all out there stepping and fetching like their heads were on fire and their asses was catching, but I figured I'd better go ahead and split before the cops got there. When I hit the road, I was really wheeling, had the gravel flying and rubber squealing, and I didn't slow down till I was almost to Arkansas. Well, I think I'm going to reroute my trip. I wonder if anybody'd think I flipped if I went to L.A. via Omaha.
Hopper, I know you just didn't say Hams. That's got to rate one of the top two nastiest beers in the United States. That's, yeah, from the land of clear blue water and all that stuff. But
it was all...
Well, let's just go ahead and do it then.
To keep from crying. Sometimes it seems so useless to remain. But you don't. Never even call me by my name. You don't have to call me Waylon Jennings. And you don't have to call me Charlie Price. And you don't have call me Merle Haggard anymore. Even though you're on my fighting side, and I'll hang around as long as you will let me. And I never minded standing in the rain. You don't have to call me darling, darling. You never even call me by my name. Well, I've heard my name a few times in your phone book.
Hello, hello.
And I've seen it all signs where I play, but the only
friend of mine named Steve Goodman wrote that song, and he told me it was the perfect country and western song. I wrote him back a letter, and I told him it was not the perfect country and western song because he hadn't said anything at all about mama, or trains, or trucks, or prison, or getting drunk. Well, he sat down and wrote another verse to the song, and he sent it to me, and after reading it, I realized that my friend had written the perfect country and western song, and I felt obliged to include it on this album. The last verse goes like this here. Well, I was drunk the day my mom got out of prison, and I went to pick her up in the rain. But before I could get to the station in the pickup truck, she got run over by a damned old train.
Don't you cry, hey. Love's a gift that's truly handmade.
got something to believe in. Now don't you think it's time we're leaving?
Take a little break from our regularly scheduled programming here and bring little Anna in here. She's going to sing a song that you heard a while ago. This gal's 8 years old. Check this out. 8 years old. All right, let's give her a hand. That was little Anna, 8 years old, doing the auctioneer. Done a pretty good job of it, I think, too.
The holy mackerel there. Hello, Wall. I didn't see you standing there. Did I hurt you? Hello, hello. Boy, I sure did hit you square. Now one of us is blasted, and I'll let you guess. Just imagine bumping into you. Hey, whoa, hello, hello. Why did you let them move the door? Ceiling. Hello, hello. Why, it used to be the floor. Someone came while I was
me, and I'm standing upside down. That chandelier is all lit up. It just took a swing at me. Someone put the bathtub where the damn boat used to be. Oh, wet bed sheet. I think I better lay me down. You know I can't sleep. Hell no. Every bed keeps you spinning around. There's a picture on the headboard that I've seen them before. Shut up, John. I'm in the house next door. Hello there, neighbor. What y'all doing there in the bed?
This is Miss Grundy, the lady I told you about from Standards and Practices, you know?
Say what?
The censor, remember? Oh, listen, this man will take care of you. You know what to do.
I'll be watching you.
Hello, everyone. This is your Action News reporter with all the news that is news across the nation. On the scene at the supermarket. There seems to have been some disturbance here. Pardon me, sir. Did you see what happened?
Yeah, I did. I was just standing over by the tomatoes, and here he comes. Running through the pole beans, through the fruits and veggies, naked as a jaybird. Ethel's over there in the jams, jellies, preserves, and pickles. I hollered over there. I said, "Don't look, Ethel!" She dropped a whole jar of kumquats and fell back into the sweet midget sack. Had us too late. She'd done been incensed. Boogity, boogity. Boogity, boogity.
And he ain't grabbing no coat. Oh, yes, they're calling the street.
There seems to have been some disturbance here. Pardon me, sir, did you see what happened?
Yeah, I did. I was just in here trying to get some air in my car there, and he disappeared out of the traffic. Comes streaking around the grease rack there, didn't have nothing on but a smile. Ethel's in there getting her a cold drink. I hollered in there, I said, "Don't look, Ethel!" Too late, she done been flashed right there in front of the shock absorbers.
He ain't
boogity, boogity.
He ain't
boogity, boogity.
He just took them to run in the new.
Well, yes, they call him the street. Like to turn the other cheek. He's always making the news, wearing just his tennis shoes. Guess you could call him unique.
Hello, once again, everyone. News reporter in the booth at the gym covering the disturbance of the basketball playoff. Pardon me, sir, did you see what happened?
Yeah, I did. It's halftime. I just going down there to get Ethel a snow cone. Here he comes, right out of the cheap seats. Right down the middle of the court there, didn't have nothing on but his high-top Reeboks. He was a-dribbling. Made a jump shot, got out through the concession. I hollered up at Ethel, I said, "Don't look, Ethel!" Too late, she done got a free shot. Grandstanded her right there in front of the home team.
Well, yes, they call him.
Whoa, here he comes again.
That thing.
Who's that?
Me.
Ethel? Is that you, Ethel?
Proud.
Where do you think you're going?
On this anatomy.
You get your clothes on.
Well, yes, they call him the street.
Ethel, you back show up, Hattie. Stay at it.
If there's an audience to be found.
They passed an ordinance in the town. They said we'd have to tear it down. That little old shack out back's so dear to me. Though the health department said its day was over and dead, it will stand forever in my memory. Don't let them tear that little precious building down. Don't let them tear that dear old building down. There's not another like it in the country or the town. It was not so long ago that I went tripping through the snow out to that house behind my old hound dog, where I would sit me down to rest like a snowbird on his nest, and I'd read that Sears and Roebuck catalog. Oh, I would hum a happy tune peeping through the quarter moon, as my daddy's kin had done so much before. It was in that quiet spot daily cares could be forgot, and it gave the same relief
most ever
rich and poor. Don't let them tear that little brown building down. Don't let them tear that precious building down. Don't let them tear that dear old building down. There's not another like it in the country or the town. Now it was not a castle fair, but I could dream a future there. Build my castle to the yellow jacket's drone. I could orbit around the sun, fight with General Washington, or be a king upon a golden throne. It wasn't fancy built at all. We had newspapers on the wall. It was air conditioned in the winter time. Oh, it was just a humble hut, but its door was never shut, and a man could get inside without a dime. Don't let them tear that little brown building down. Don't let them tear that precious building down. Don't let them tear that dear old building down. There's not another like it in the country or the town.
Thank you a lot for your sympathy. This sure is a nice, clean-looking bunch of people. I see one fella has got a nice haircut there, showing through his scalp. Well, we just know two songs, and we always sing one of them first. Which one you want to do next?
Let's do the other.
All right. This little thing we'd like to dedicate to Jethro's wife. She's out in the car in the trunk. She's a blonde this week, and I think she looks awful good in that new beach outfit you got for her.
We had a little trouble on that the first day she wore it.
It's a two-piece beach outfit, ain't it?
Yeah, a shovel and a pail.
He's a little worried about his wife. She went out and got her one of these new sack dresses, and it fits her. And that's a lot to worry about, you know. This is a little tune called He Didn't Like Her Apartment, So He Knocked Her Flat.
Oh, let me go, let me go, let me go, beloved. Let me scat like a cat away from you. You're too fat. In the first place, you know it's true. You're too fat in the second place, too.
When I said that, your bustle was cute as could be. You said, Homer, that's no bustle, that's me.
Oh, turn me loose. Please reduce your caboose, blubber. Pound for pound, you're just too round for
talk over my solo, please.
Don't play over my talking. She had 9 buttons on her nightgown, but she could only fasten 8.
Thank you. Thank you. I deserve every bit of it.
You fellas can quit playing now. Jethro's mad, I think.
What's the matter? Are you mad?
No, I'm not mad. I'm used to having my solos interrupted and broken up like that. It doesn't bother me in the least.
You mad, Shorna?
No, I'm not mad. I told you I'm not
mad. You sure you're not mad?
I'm not mad.
You sure?
All right, if it'll make you any happier, I am a little burned up over it.
Well, you don't look mad.
I was doing real good up until the time gangrene set in. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to finish that because it's very seldom that I get to play a solo. We'll take it at the letter A, boys. So feel free to lay out.
I think you better get back there in the band where you belong.
I can't do it. They're union.
Could you play that last spasm again there, please?
Same place, Floyd.
Excuse me, I thought you was playing it wrong there at first. That was a whole lot better, thank you. When you had sound like Archie Campbell here. When you had your appendix removed at last, they didn't know whether to operate or blast. Oh, let me go, let me go, let me go, blubber. Set me free, your kiss too much for me.
The hawk of a man with the beard in his hand, he looked like a drunk old fool, and I knew if I hit him right, well, I could knock him off of that stool. But everybody, they said, watch out, hey, that's Tiger Man McCool. He's had a whole lot of fights, and he's always come out winner. Yeah, he's a winner. But I'd had myself about 5 too many, and I walked up tall and proud. I faced his back, and I faced the fact that he had never stooped or bowed. I said, Tiger Man, you're a pussycat, and a hush fell on the crowd. I said, let's you and me go outside and see who's a winner. Well, he gripped the bar with one big hairy hand and he braced against the wall. He slowly looked up from his beard. My God, that man was tall. He said, boy, I see you're a scrapper. So just before you fall, I'm gonna tell you just a little about what it means to be a winner. He said, now you see these bright white smiling teeth, you know they ain't my own. Mine roll away like chiclets down the street in San Antonio.
But I left that person cursing, nursing 7 broken bones. And he only broke 3 of mine. That makes me the winner. He said, now behind this grin, I got a steel pin that holds my jaw in place. A trophy of my most successful motorcycle race. And each morning when I wake and touch this scar across my face, it reminds me of all I got by being a winner. Now this broken back was a dying act of a handsome Harry Clay. That sticky Sanson that night I stole his wife away. But that woman, she gets uglier and she gets meaner every day. But I got her, boy, and that's what makes me a winner. He said, you gotta speak loud when you challenge me, son, 'cause it's hard for me to hear. With this twisted neck and these migraine pains and this big old cauliflower ear. And if it wasn't for this glass eye of mine, why, I'd shed a happy tear. To think of all that you're gonna get by being a winner. I got arthritic elbow, boy. I got dislocated knees from picking fights with thunderstorms and charging into trees. And my nose been broke so often, I might lose it if I sneeze. And son, you say you still wanna be a winner. Now you remind me a lot of my younger days with your knuckles a-clenching white. But boy, I'm gonna sit right here and sip this beer all night. And if there's something that you gotta gain or prove by winning some silly fight, well, okay, I quit. I lose, you're the winner. I stumbled from that barroom, not so tall and not so proud. And behind me I still hear the hoots of laughter of the crowd. But my eyes still see and my nose still works and my teeth are still in my mouth. And you know, I guess that makes me the winner!
Most everybody in this great country has heard my story about the coon hunt. I want to review it with you just for a moment and get you up to date if by chance you hadn't heard it. Because this whole nation is worried about John Eubanks, what's up in that tree. They are worried about him, and John squalling and bellering and asking for some help. And I left him up in that tree when I told my last story. And I said, Mr. Barron, that thing's eating John up. What in the world are we going to do? And I commenced to squalling. John was a first cousin of mine. And I'd wipe of them tears, and I squalling, and I said, Mr. Barron, let's do something. That thing's eating John up. 4 of the dogs had done got scared and left and went to the house. Mr. Barron said, boys, we have got to do something. I don't know nothing to do except see can we make enough a racket here on the ground to get that thing's attention, and maybe it'll turn John loose and jump out of that tree. He said, you boys twist them dogs' ears, make them howl. Scream hysterical. Jerry, you get a hold to that muscadine vine over there and commence to snatching it and screaming to the top of your voice. I'll holler loud as I can and shoot this pistol 6 times. And maybe that thing will turn John loose. Folks, that thing not only jumped out of that tree, but it whooped every dog on the ground. tore both britches' legs out of Mr. Barron's overhauls and run off. We ain't never hunted in that neck of them woods ever again. Come on down, John. That thing's gone. Come on down, John. That thing's gone. John started easing down that tree. That old sweet gum rosin was getting in them places where that thing had clawed him. That bark on that sweet gum tree was stinging him, and he was squalling. And just as John's foot hit the ground, my brother Sonny mocked that thing. Wow! John went right back to the top. All the way to the top. We're just joking, John. We're just joking. Come on down. John eased down that tree finally, and I armed him up and put him in my arms, and I broke and run to the house. I was squalling, and I laid him down on the front porch, and I said, Mama, Mama, come here quick. Bring every bit of the medicine we got in the house. We got a Dr. John. Something has eat him up. My mother scrapped up all of the medication she could find in our shotgun modest home, brought it out there and set it down on the porch by John, and all she brought was black draw and 3/6. I said, Mama, John don't need to swallow nothing. We need to daub something on him. We finally loaded John up in a pickup truck and took him over to Liberty, Mississippi, and the late Dr. Quinn sewed John up, and John lived to hunt again.
That's right, Leroy. Tune it up with the drum. That sounds real good.
I don't want to go home.
Why should I?
I don't want to go home. Nobody wants to go home.
I'll tell you why. Last night I took a nap in Detroit City. And I dreamed about my papa's old cotton patch. My poor back was breaking. Both my knees was aching. The red bugs kept on biting. But I didn't have time to scratch.
I don't want to go home.
City. Going back to the hills in Tennessee. But I'll still make the cars, and I'll still make the bars. Lots of the crazy little women to keep me company. You see, I work in this automobile factory in Detroit City, in the shock absorber division. Did you ever look inside one of them shock absorbers? Well, they got a little old round washer right in the top of them, see? And my job is to cram this little round washer into every one of them shock absorbers that comes down that long conveyor belt. Heck, I only been there 6 years, and I'm already the number one washer crammer in the whole shock absorber division. That's right.
I don't want to go home. I don't want to go home. Nobody.
Matt's and Leroy home if he don't get that darn thing in tune. Come on, Leroy. Keep trying, son. Don't give up for a minute.
First of all, I want you to know that I come from Route 4, Liberty, Mississippi. Now, that's 12 miles west of Macomb, Mississippi, 65 miles due northeast of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and 116 miles due north of New Orleans, Louisiana. It was there that I first saw the light of day out in Amite County, September the 28th, 1926. I was born there. Now, as I grew up in that community, the only extracurricular activities that we engaged in was to go coon hunting or go to revival meeting if we had a crop laid by. And that's all we did except work. And this particular day that I want to tell you about is one evening when we were going coon hunting. We had a pack of hounds. When we went to mill with our corn to get it ground up, we'd get some ground for dog bread, and we'd get some ground for just regular corn meal for human consumption. This particular day, we wasn't too busy. All we had done is just cut down a few fence rows, shut and shelled some corn and went to mill, drew up some water because that was wash day, helped get the sow back, what rooted out from under the net wire fence, sharpened two sticks of stove wood real sharp and pegged them down over the bottom wire of the fence where the hog couldn't root out no more. And had a rat killing. If I'm lying, I'm dying. We had rat killings in those days. Well, this particular day after we got through the rat killing, I walked out on the front porch and I hollered, and them dogs come out from the house barking. They knew we was going coon hunting. And I hollered again, and my neighbor way across the sage patch hollered back. And that meant I'll meet you halfway. We met in the middle of that sage patch, and he had his dogs, old Brummy and Queen and Spot, and I had Tory and Little Red and old Trailer. And we went out into the swamps, and we started hunting. Oh, we was having such a fine time. Caught four great big ones. I heard a racket, and it scared me, and I whooped my carbide light, what I had wired to my cap around there, and I was looking in the vicinity of where I heard the racket coming from. And the beam of light hit a man right in the face, and it likened to have scared me slapped to death because we was hunting on this man's place. I said, "Mr. Barron, is that you?" He said, "Yes, Jerry. What are y'all doing? We hunting. How many have you caught? Four great big ones." He said, "Well, boys, glad to see you. Y'all want to spend the rest of the evening hunting with me and John?" Well, I looked, and lo and behold, that was John Eubanks, a man that lived on Mr. Barron's place. John Eubanks was a great American. He was a professional tree climber. He didn't believe, I'm telling you the truth, he didn't believe in shooting no coon out of no tree. It was against his upbringing. He taught us from birth, from the day we were born till the age we could keep listening to him, give everything a sporting chance. Whatever you do, give it a sporting chance. He'd have been a great conservationist today if he'd be here. And John said, "Take a crosscut saw coon hunting with you. When you tree a coon, hold the dogs and cut the tree down. Or either climb the tree and make the coon jump in amongst the dogs. Give him a sporting chance." A lot of times we climb a tree and make a coon jump in amongst 20 dogs, but at least he had the option of whooping all them dogs and walking off if he wanted to. This is strictly left up to the coon. So I said, "Mr. Barron, we'd be glad to go hunting with you." You know, he was a rich man. He had sold a lot of cotton during the First World War for a dollar a pound. He had some world-renowned dogs. And we hollered three or four times, and they started hunting. We listened, and directly, old Brummy didn't bark at nothing but a coon. He had a deep voice. And when he cut out on him, it was a coon. Don't worry about no possum or no bobcat. Brummy was running a coon. And then old Trailer and old Highball and them famous dogs and Mr. Barron's got in there with them, and old John Eubanks would holler, "Hey, speak to him." And my brother son would holler, "Hey, look for him." And oh, it was beautiful. Now y'all get this picture. about that time they treed, we rushed down into the swamps. And there the dogs were, treed up the biggest sweet gum tree in all of Amit River swamps. It was huge. You couldn't reach around this tree. There wasn't a limb on it for a while. Way up there, huge tree. And I looked around at John, and I said, John, I don't believe you can climb that tree. And it hurt John's feelings. He pooched his lips out, got fighting mad. He said, there ain't a tree in all these swamps that I can't climb. And he got his Brogan shoes off, and he eased up to that sweet gum tree, and he hung his toenails in that bark, and he got his fingernails in there, and he kept easing up the tree, working his way toward that bottom limb, and he finally got to it, and he started on up into this big tree. Knock him out, John. It won't be long. And John worked his way on up to the top of the tree, and whoo, what a big one. And he reached around in his overhauls and got that sharp stick, and he drawed back, and he punched the coon. But it wasn't a coon. It was a lynx. We call them souped-up wildcats in Amit County. And that thing had great big tushies coming out of its mouth and red big claws on the end of its feet. And people, that thing attacked it, John, up in the top of that tree. Whoa! You could hear John squall. What's the matter with John? I don't have no idea. What in the world's happening to John? Knock him out, John. Whoa! This thing's killing me. The whole top of the tree was shaking. The dogs got to biting the bark of the tree and fighting one another underneath the tree. And I was kicking them back. You dogs, get away. What's the matter with John? Knock him out, John. Whoa! This thing's killing me. And John knew that Mr. Barron told him a pistol in his belt to shoot snakes with. And he kept hollering, whoa, shoot this thing. Have mercy, this thing killing me. Shoot this thing. And Mr. Barron said, John, I can't shoot up in there. I might hit you. John said, well, just shoot up in here amongst us. One of us got to have some relief.
I'm going to tell you some bedtime stories. Of course, you know you can't tell bedtime stories anymore like you used to. Now, when I was a little boy, I enjoyed those tales about the three little bears and Goldilocks and things like that. It was wonderful. But you can't do that anymore. These kids are too smart. They see too many things. I started telling my little boy, he's 9. He'll be 10 in October if you don't get too smart with me. I sat him up on my knee and I started telling him about the three little bears. He said, oh, Daddy, don't give me that bear jazz. He said, in the first place, I don't believe in the three little bears. He said, I think Goldilocks was a square and Jack ain't never had a beanstalk that long. So I changed things around a little bit and told him a bedtime story and kind of twisted it up, turned the words around. I want to give the kid credit for his intelligence. That's the way I told him the story. I'll tell it to you kids. Once upon a time, there was P. Little Thriggs. Well, actually, there was more than that. There was Pama Mig and Papa Fig. Papa Fig, that don't work, does it? But anyhow, that's all together, that was 5 little figs. And one day, the first of these P. Little Thriggs, he was... he was walking down the road, and he saw a man widen a ragging. And he said, hey, mister, said, would you sell me that strode of law? Said, I want to heal me a bounce. I want to build me a horse trouse. So he got the straw and he built him a horse trouse. And along came the big wet wolf. And he said, "Hey, Piddleig, let me in." Piddleig says, "Not by the chair of my henny hen hen." He said, "I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll hold your blouse down." So he huffed and he puffed and he hoed his blouse down. And he ate up the Piddleig. Then the second of the pea little thrigs, he went off down the road and he saw another man widening a ragged. And he said, "Hey, mister," he said, "would you sell me that stoat of licks? I want to heal me a bouse. I'm going to build me a hick stouse." So he built him a stouse out of hicks. And along came the big wide buff. And he said, "Hey, Piddleig, let me in." Piddleig says, "Not by the chair of my henny hen hen." He said, "I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll hold your blouse down." So he huffed and he puffed and he hold his blouse down and he ate up the Piddleig. Then the third of the pea little thrigs, he was a little smarter, Teddy. He went off down the road and he saw another man wagon a riding. Wigging a rodent. And he said, "Hey, mister, would you sell me that bro to licks? I want to heal me a bounce. And I'm going to build me a hick browse." So he built him a browse out of hicks. Along came the big bad wolf. And he said, "That was a big wad wolf, wasn't it?" "Yeah." He said, "Hey, Piddleig," he said, "let me in." He said, "Not by the chair of my henny hen hen." He said, "I'll huff and I'll huff and I'll hold your blouse down." So he huffed and he puffed and he puffed and he huffed and he couldn't hold his blouse down. You gotta be careful. He stuck his head up to the window and he said, "All right, Piddleig," said, "you're absolutely root." Said, "I can't hold your blouse down," but he said to himself, said, "I'll fix him," said, "I'll climb up on the roof and I'll chide down the slimney." So he climbed on up on the roof and he chid down the slimney. But the third of these pea little thrigs, he was smart. He knew what was going on. So he ran in the kitchen and got him a great big pot of boiling wat hotter. And he put this pot of boiling wat hotter over the fireplace, and the big wad buff hit it. And as soon as he hit that water, he said, "Ouch." He said, "This is extremely painful to a wolf's gluteus maximum." So the third of the pea little thrigs, he ran in the kitchen right quick and he got him a real narp shife. And he cut that big wad buff open and got his two little brothers out. And they had wolf stew for supper. And friends, that's good. Seasoned just right, you know, with pig ears and stuff. And they danced and sang, and the pea little thrigs lived heavily after afterwards.
Growing up, word got out that the best coon hunter in the world was a fellow that lived at East Macomb, Mississippi. And we done sent him word by the mail rider, "There ain't no coon dog in the world good as Highball. Don't you ever say or tell nobody that there is. We don't believe it none." Well, we got us up a little contest. They said, "Yeah, this feller will catch more coons on a night's hunt than y'all will." Well, he come driving up in his pickup truck to East Fork School. That's where we met. Fellow let the end gate down on one of them pickups, and that was a cage, and sitting up in the back of that pickup was a big brown monkey. Marcel said, "Whoo, look, don't let that thing out." Said, "He looks..." "Oh," said, "keep him in there." Said, "He looks too much like folks to be getting out of that. You leave him up in that pickup truck." Fellow said, "Y'all don't understand. I use a dog with the monkey. I just want one good tree dog, and I'll show you how to catch more raccoons. The hides are expensive. And I make a good living with that monkey. Coon hunting. Ma says, and I ain't taking my dog with that trashy thing. Clovis said, I'll take old June and we'll go. So all of us followed, and old June hadn't gone very far, and she treed. Now, any coon hunter will know that sometimes a raccoon will get up in a tree and he'll tap the tree, go out on a limb and jump into another tree, go out on a limb and jump into another one, and come down way out yonder. Well, that's the art of being a good coon dog. You circle around, make for sure he ain't tapped the tree, and he's up there if you say he's there. Well, old June tree to turn that monkey loose, had him on a chain, and people, he had a flashlight in his left hand and a pistol in his right hand. And up that tree he went, boogity, 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 right up that tree, went all over the tree, shining that light and had that gun. Looking everywhere. Out on each limb, shining, shining, shining. And what he did, he find the coon and shoot him, and the coon falls out. Well, he hadn't found no coon. Down the tree he come. Thumb cocked that pistol, put it up to old June's head, Clovis his dog, and said, boom, just killed him. Graveyard dead right there. Clovis said, man, what in the world do you mean? That trashy thing has killed my dog. And the fellow what owned the monkey said, Clovis, there ain't but one thing that monkey hates worse than a raccoon, and that's a lying coon dog.
Principal Butris. And it hoes happened that there was a wuggly old lich. She lived in Dacre because the Principal Butris was just as pud as she was gritty. So the wuggly old lich spassed a Keeble L and made the Principal Butris slow to geep. Then the wuggly old itch went around reeking with slaughter and bellin' evertidy that the Principal Butris would slow on geepin' until Bum Soddy Lell and Fub with her and kissed her so she could ache and what. And chortled the wuggly old itch, Bo Noddy will loll and fub with Benny Oddy, who's a teepawless line. And so the Principal Butris became known as Beeping Slooty. One day, a Buller Fresh man copped by the station. And when Bo Naughty answered his dock at the Knower, he walked into Linda and saw Beeping Slooty. Now, he didn't care whether she was neeping or slot. Because when he saw how wire she fuzzed, he gloped the brass and bimed into the cled room where Beeping Slooty was sound asleep. So he counted a place on the nip of her toes, and Beeping Slooty opened her eyes. "Die mudness," she said. "My mare must be a hess." "It certainly says," said the Buller Fresh man. And then Sullivan Udden, the Buller Fresh man, knelt on his knees and hook her by the tan. He said, "I'm not really a Buller Fresh man. I'm a hung and prancing yent." "But a wuggly old itch could a purse on me and canish me from my bingdom until I could sell a Beeping Slooty a Buller Fresh. You have spoken the bell. Will you marry me?" Beeping Slooty said, "Now, strizzen this ain't. You've spoken my bell, too. Yes, I will marry you because we have so cutch and mama." And, Mo, they were married. And one of the durst things they fed was to have the wuggly old itch pressed into kissing so she didn't coo any more dicked weeds. So remember this. If you happen to spall under a feeble L and you want to end up threatening on a song, don't ever chass up a pants to kiss a Beeping Slooty.
Penland Oil Association of America had their meeting at a big hotel down at Houston, Texas. And they got this Ph.D. feller from way up in the Midwest to come and make a speech. Now, folks, he forevermore made a speech.
How's it going,
Art? It so inflamed and enthused all of those oil folks that they called their executive committee together and they said, "Listen, let's hire that fella. And let's put him out on the road making this same speech just to wherever he can gather up a crowd, let him talk to them." And he did. Bought him a big car and got him a chauffeur with a blue serge suit. And this man just started traveling all over the country making this speech. Well, after they had been doing this for about 8 months, going down the four-lane highway, that chauffeur looked in the rearview mirror and he said, "Professor, what?" He said, "There ain't no fairness in this country." "My good man, why would you make a statement like that?" He said, "I can make that cotton-picking speech as good as you can. And I'm barely making a living on what y'all paying me, and you getting rich." He said, "Sir, I want you to know that I got my B.S. degree." He said, "Don't start all wherever you got all them things. I ain't interested in them. I done heard you make that speech once a day for 8 months. I done memorized it. I'm a better speech maker than you are, and I can make the cotton-picking speech better than you can. It's just that simple." He said, "I'm fixing to go to a major university and they ain't never seen me. They don't even know what I look like. You pull over to the roadside park up here, we are about the same size. And we'll trade clothes and I'll break you from sucking eggs. We'll put you up there on the stage and let you make the speech and I'll be the chauffeur and sit out in the congregation and I'll watch you make a fool out of yourself. That suits me fine. Let's change clothes." Now, y'all get this picture. They drive up to the big major university. The real professor with the blue serge suit on driving the big car. The chauffeur sitting on the back seat with a little briefcase in his lap. 22,000 people in the field house. Standing room only. The great Ph.D., what graduated from the great school of mines, was coming to speak. And they introduced him. And just as he got up to speak, there was the real professor sitting on the back row with the hard-billed chauffeur's cap in his lap, peeping at him. Now, y'all talking about making a speech. Whoo, he forevermore shelled down the corn. He shucked it right on down to the cob. They throwed their books in the air, wallered on the floor, hollered, give him a standing ovation, screamed. And they finally got order restored. And the president of the school got up and said, "Well, we have about 10 minutes before the bell rings. I wonder if y'all would like to ask this gentleman any questions." "Yes, would you like to ask him any questions?" "Well, y'all have seen the type. A fella got up in the, about halfway back with big horn-rimmed glasses on, a real egghead, had books under each arm. He said, 'Professor, if one of those dinosaurs died what roamed the earth 2 billion years ago and his carcass rotted, and the earth's atmosphere built up layer after layer after layer to 5,986 feet. And 2 billion years later, a drill bit drilling a well on a wildcat venture bores through this decayed carcass. What will the pH of the soil be that's contained in the core of the drill bit? And what will be the name of the stratosphere?'" This fellow just stood there and looked at him. You could have heard a pin drop. And this fellow said, "Mr. Student, as long as I've been in this business, that's about the most simplest question I ever been asked since I've been speaking. I'm surprised they'd let a man that don't know no more than you know get in this university. And just to show you how simple the question is, my chauffeur's in the back of the room. I'll ask him to stand up and answer."
"And let me ask you this. Do you think Jimmy is roaming around the White House tonight trying to find a meatloaf to warm himself up on?"
"I don't think the cod has eaten meatloaf."
"Who the hell are they? They're only from Georgia." "Oh, let me tell you something. I am so sick of Washington and all its works and all them politicians down there and them congressmen and the congressmen. Boy, I'll bet you won't find none of them congressmen signing down their electric blankets tonight. Would you? They did their secretaries to get up and go home." "Oh, Reedus, the Democrats is doing the whole thing. The Democrats. And you put them in there. That's the face you had on you when you come back in the polls. Well, the Democrats' way of running this country is to go tell us all how we ought to make sacrifices. God, they're great on that stuff. But they're all going to have us over the hill to the poorhouse. We ain't going to be able to drive over there because we ain't got no gas, so we're going to have to walk it."
"The Reader's Digest says walking is very good for you."
"Oh, ain't that lovely? The Reader's Digest can always put a little joy into poverty." "Listen, my whole point, is this whole thing with the energy and everything. This is all a conspiracy. No, you know that? It's a conspiracy there. Listen. For years, all our lives, they've been telling us to go out and buy stuff that use energy. You know, all electrical stuff. Like electric toasters, electric ovens, electric stove, electric stereo, electric TV, electric race, electric hair blower, electric knives, electric every damn thing. Not to mention the cars. And now, after all the big corporations there make the billions and billions of dollars worth of profits, signals, wham, they're changed. And after telling us for years that we can't live without this junk, now they tell us that we gotta live without it. The country is going straight into the dumper."
The most famous of all the voodoo queens that ever existed is Marie Laveau down in Louisiana. A lot of weird, ungodly tales about Marie. She's supposed to have a lot of magic potions and spells and curses.
"Down in Louisiana where the black trees grow lives a voodoo lady named Marie Laveau. She got a black cat tooth and a mojo bone. Anyone who wouldn't leave her and stringy hair. And if she ever seen y'all messing around there, she goes, I know the man done gone. And then one night when the moon was black, into the swamp come Handsome Jack. No good man like you all know. When he was looking around for Marie Laveau, he said, Marie Laveau, you lovely witch, now give me a little charm that'll make me rich. Now give me $1 million and tell you what I'll do. This very night I'm gonna marry you, and it'll be another man done gone. So Marie done some magic and she shook a little sand, made $1 million and she put it in his hand. Then she giggled and she wiggled and she said, hey, hey, I'm getting ready for my wedding day. But oh, a Handsome Jack, he said, goodbye, Marie. You're too damn ugly for a rich man like me. Then Marie started mumbling, her fangs started gnashing, her body started trembling and her eyes started flashing, and she went, another man done gone. Oh, if you ever get down where the black trees grow, when me a voodoo lady named Marie Laveau, if she ever asks you to make her your wife, man, you better stay with her for the rest of your life, or it'll be
happened to her hiney.
Her what?
Her Man, that thing's big enough to land a small plane on.
Small plane?
Tell him. I used to roll her in the clover.
Mm-hmm.
But thank God those days are over.
Hallelujah.
It's hard to kiss the lips at night that chew your ass out all day long. All day long. She knows on and on.
If someday they drop the big one, I'd say, sweet Jesus, she's gonna finally leave me alone. It's all right if we say it,
'cause the radio won't play it. It's hard to kiss the lips at night that chew your ass out all day long. It's hard to kiss your ass out all day long.
All right, that's it, guys. Fastest 2 hours in internet radio, no doubt about it. Had a lot of fun. There's a lot of songs I haven't heard there for many, many years, so I thought I'd throw them in there. Nothing serious tonight. The most serious thing we had was The Auctioneer. And that's a pretty lively song. We can live with one like that. So anyway, hope you guys have a great weekend. I'm out of here. Got things to do, place to go, and people to see. And Amy and I will both be back in here with you Monday. Thanks for joining us.
It seems that you've changed in these past few days. Oh, when I try.
Okay, that about wraps it up for another edition of Liberty Lounge on this Friday evening. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Remember that your life is a gift from God. How you spend it is your gift to Him. Good night.
And it's all over, but the crying. Called you on the phone just to find out what was wrong, and the things you said made my suspicions real. You said tonight again you have to stay with this sick friend, but that story I'm not. It's all over, but the crying. It's all over, but the crying. I never would have thought you were lying. It sounded so true when you said I love you. Now I'll say my goodbye, 'cause it's all over but the crying. It's all